Yeah, good morning, everybody. Welcome to East Shore Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm Martin Schreiber. I'm on a number of committees. I'm on your finance committee and also chair of the building and grounds. Welcome to any newcomers. I'd like to make a special welcome to two newcomers, well, relatively new. Our guest preacher today, Reverend Dr. Rena Shear. Did I get that right? Yeah, I did. Okay. And our guest musician, Laura Silverman. I encourage you to read their biographies in the order of service. If you've not already done so, please silence any cell phones or whatever is going to make noise during the service. Whether you ran in here on little feet or walked in briskly, ambled in or rolled in, you're welcome here. Whatever the flags of your heritage, you're welcome here. May you find new things to revere. Whatever your religious background or lack of religion, you are welcome here. May you find new things to discover. Whatever your political persuasion and whomever you've grown to love, you're welcome here in this religious community. May you find a connection here. Now sharing the words of Sunshine Jeremiah Wolfe. At its best, Unitarian Universalism is a religion of people who covenant to treat one another well, care for the earth, and protect the beautiful tapestry of cultures and communities that make up the people of the world. Love is the core value from which we build. And now I think it's time for our opening hymn. I'll save you the step coming up here.
So please, everybody, rise. As you are willing to enable for number 1029, Love Knocks and Waits for Us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm delighted to be here with you. How's the sound? Can everyone hear all right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So let's prepare our hearts and minds for this time of worship together. We come to this hour to be released from the busyness of our world. We seek solace here in this still, quiet space. We come together this hour to know joy in our mutual fellowship and to find comfort in the presence of each other. We come to this hour to renew our spirits so that we may be the justice makers that our faith calls us to be. We gather to be accountable to one another so that we may continue to be our best selves in thought and in deed. So bring your full self to this hour. Let us be present to this time of worship together. So may it be.
We light our chalice with the words from Fred Rogers, who exemplified our first principle to honor the inherent worth and dignity of all. Hey, Dan, would you help me light the chalice this morning? Thanks. I appreciate it. And I'm sure everybody else does too. If you could only sense how important you are to the lives of those you meet, how important you can be to the people you may never even dream of. There is something of yourself that you leave at every meeting with another person. May this light remind us that which is given to us in our being together. Thank you, Dan. So when you came in this morning, you had the opportunity to choose a stone from that bowl back there at the head of the aisle. And if you haven't done so yet, now would be a great time to do so. So feel free to jog or walk or amble or crawl. Use the force. And one more quote from Mr. Rogers here. Well, It's not the last one, but here's the next one. The gifts we treasure most over the years are often small and simple. In easy times and in tough times, what seems to matter most is the way we show those nearest us that we've been listening to their needs, to their joys, and to their challenges. And one of the ways we do that is with the book that sits on the pedestal outside of the sanctuary. And that book usually finds its way up here at some point. And I have a feeling that sometime in the next, 30 seconds, it's going to find its way up here, and then I'm going to read from that book. Oh. Thank you, Maggie. Perfect. There's nothing in here. But that's okay, because we've all got plenty of joys and cares in and on our hearts, and we can make do with those. So with those in mind, and with your stone in hand, we will now observe a moment of silence for whatever weighs greatly on our hearts. And then when the singing bowl sounds, I invite you to come up and place your stones in the bowl at the center of the sanctuary underneath our beacon. Please join me in placing their bowls and the stones in the bowl.
Thank you.
This is a time now for what some of us might call prayer and others might call intentional mindfulness. Mysterious source of all being, spirit of life and spirit of love, we come to you from many paths and we gather this morning to recognize our common humanity. We are the sisters and brothers of those in Australia suffering from heat and fire, and we hold the sorrow and pain of the families of the three Americans who died this week, who were in Australia helping those in that country. And we reach inside our personal resolve to be mindful of what we each might do every day to lessen the impact of climate change, knowing that it does take the lives of others. We keep in our thoughts those in China battling sickness and those isolated and frightened and quarantined and unable to be with their families as this weekend begins the Lunar New Year for millions and millions of people. We send thoughts of peace to our leaders and the people of Iran and Iraq and all over the Middle East. We hold the refugees from violence and poverty around the world in our hearts this morning. We hold in our thoughts the members of this congregation who struggle with illness and chronic pain. We offer solace to those feeling loneliness, depression, or despair. We offer compassion and hope to those whose minds are restless and anxious. We offer freedom to those in bondage from drugs and alcohol. May they be clear-eyed and healthy once again. And we have gathered to acknowledge the power of individuals to continue oppression, but the greater power of individuals with love and hope to resist oppression. May we be filled with a passion to work in this world, creating pathways of freedom and wholeness for all people. Amen. And this morning we will also add a sung meditation. You may remain seated, but please open the teal hymnal. And this is a really beautiful meditation, and it is 1053, How Could Anyone? So remain seated and we will sing this.
When I was a young boy, I loved watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Honestly, I loved watching anything on PBS, because at that age, when they told me, this program is brought to you by our sponsors and viewers like you, I really believed that. I thought that my viewership, the fact that I wanted to see it, is what kept it going. My participation mattered because I mattered. And then Mr. Rogers would appear on screen and confirm that, yes, I really did matter. He was doing this just for me. That's when I decided I was going to be Mr. Rogers. Now the years passed on, and I learned about donations and call-a-thons, and that these were actually reruns and had been made many years before me, and that I wasn't that special. But I had something to offer the world. If I could just be half, 50% the man Mr. Rogers was, I could be proud. I'd help people. People would like the way I dressed. I'd have a hat, and I could sing a song about it. No corners. And then more time passed. Mr. Rogers died, and I realized for the first time how many people hated him. Anxiety set in for more reasons than I'd ever have time to list, but I still had something to offer the world. I could be just a quarter, 25% the man Mr. Rogers was. Then I could be proud. I'd get a job singing to children and helping them understand their feelings. And I'd wear a funny tie when I did it. And then I became an adult. I earned 2 college degrees at the same time and took poor care of my health. I fell in love and back out again, twice. I got the job singing to children and helping them understand their feelings. I wear a funny tie and a cool hat. That's something, right? Maybe I could be like 1% the man Mr. Rogers was. I've read through the wisdom of the world according to Mr. Rogers countless times. And I think I'm finally starting to get it this year. And I can proudly say that I am 100% not the man Mr. Rogers was. As Dan Bond so perfectly put it last week after the choir rehearsed, I think he's Jared Hammond, and he's being himself. And aren't I special, just the way I am? Our readings this morning come from Joanne and Fred Rogers. First from Joanne Rogers. There were always quotes tucked away in Fred's wallet, next to his neatly folded bills or in the pages of his daily planner book. Perhaps he liked having words of wisdom close to him, as if he wanted or needed to be constantly reminded of what was important in life. The outside world may have thought his qualities of wisdom, strength, came naturally to him, but those close to him knew that he was constantly striving to be the best that he could be. He was as human as the rest of us. The person Fred became in his later years came out of growth and struggle. As he got older, it seemed as if the nature of his soul and mind became more and more important. If I were asked for three words to describe him, I think those words would be courage, love, and discipline, perhaps in that very order. And from Fred Rogers. It's very important to look inside yourself and find that loving part of you. That's the part that you must take good care of and never be mean to. Because that's the part of you that allows you to love your neighbor. And your neighbor is anyone you happen to be with at any time in your life. Today, each of you received a small piece of Fred Rogers' wisdom in your orders of service. Maybe it will sit in your wallet or planner or be a source of conversation later over coffee. It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. Always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. And since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
You know, Fred Rogers was many things, and he was also a musician. And I'm just so grateful for Jared sharing his musical talents and Laura. Fred played the piano every day. His wife was a pianist, and music was a very big part of their spirituality, of their living, of their discipline. So I just want to acknowledge these gifts and thank you. So I have a question as we begin. How many of you either watched Fred Rogers as a child or maybe with your children, if you were a parent or grandparent? Okay, so almost every person in this room. All right, so there's some connection there. So I have to confess that I really did not watch Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, as a child. We had very limited TV time, and the one show that I remember being allowed to watch was I Love Lucy. And I think it was because I'm a younger sister. I have one older sibling, my sister, who was my best friend and continues to be my best friend in life. And she went to kindergarten in the mornings, and she would come home for lunch. And I Love Lucy was on from 11:30 to 12, and I think I was allowed to watch it because it was a way for my mom to say, your sister will be home when I Love Lucy is done, because I was always ask her, when is Sissy coming home? When is Sissy coming home? And so I just always remember I Love Lucy, and then my sister would come home for lunch. But I learned about Fred Rogers and the whole ethos of Mr. Rogers really as an adult and really as a Unitarian Universalist. And I can remember it was in December, it was December 14th, 2012. And I don't know if that date rings a bell, but that was the day of Sandy Hook. And I was in my office at the UU Society in Cleveland Heights. I was the director of religious education at that time. And Friday was a busy day because I was always working on my time for all ages and checking in with lesson plans with the teachers. And we began to hear on the news about the massacre at the school with the little children. And DREs started calling and emailing, and we had a Facebook group, and we were all trying to provide comfort and resources for how we would help the parents and children and grandparents in our congregation find language, find the courage to be able to talk about this with their children. And one of the DREs posted that some of the wisdom that she had always learned and remembered from Fred Rogers was to look for the helper, that there are always helpers. And that wisdom helped me that day. It helped me craft an email and talk to my families about it. It helped me talk to my own children about it. And I can remember sitting with my kids on the couch after school telling them that when bad things happen in the world, always look for the helper, because there always is a helper. And one thing that I think Fred can be a model for us is that he did not shy away from difficult conversations. This was a man who, with puppets in the 60s and 70s, taught preschoolers and young children what the word assassination meant. He did not shy away from the conversations that we as parents might want to shield our children from, but realizing that our children hear these words and our children feel what's going on when something isn't right. And so I always thank Fred Rogers for that courage. And it's interesting, you know, with his show, he worked with several professors at the University of Pittsburgh, several early childhood professionals. And one of them, a woman named Margaret McFarland, taught Fred the whole idea that anything, any feeling that is human is mentionable. And when something is mentionable, then it can become manageable. If we can say it out loud, share what's going on out loud in a trusting environment, then we can work to heal, to take care of things. So that's the first time when I really, really thought about Fred Williams and his advice. I was reminded again of Fred Williams just a couple years ago, in August of 2017, when I answered the clergy call to go down to Charlottesville, Virginia, for the counter-protest for the Unite the Right rally. And I was called to be one of the helpers, and I answered that call. And in the midst of so much hatred and chaos, I was wearing, with many other clergy, wearing a clergy collar and walking around, and particularly the aftermath when they were really, the police were trying to disperse everyone. And I was with a group of people from my old congregation in Lynchburg, Virginia, and we were walking down a street and we turned the corner right as the emergency vehicles were taking away the people like Heather Hayer, who later died, who had been injured when the young man, with intention, rammed his car into people. And we were walking, and a group of very distraught young women came up to me, and they saw my collar, and one of them said, "You must be a priest. Can you please do something, pray with us? You have to do something. You have to help us." And this was a young group of students from UVA, and they were really distraught because they had just seen, carried off in one of the EMS vehicles, a man who was a stranger, but who that night before had helped them on the campus when they had been caught with the rally people surrounding them on the campus, and they had seen them again that day. He had helped them get to safety that Friday night. They had just seen him again that day, and he had been one of the people who had been injured by that vehicle, and they were distraught. And so in the middle of the sound of the EMS vehicles, police on bullhorns really trying to disperse the crowds, we just stood, four strangers, and prayed and held hands and tried to comfort each other. And the message is that there are always helpers, and there are always people who need to be helpers. And there are times when you may not even think of yourself as a helper, but you will be called to just step up and be a source of comfort to someone, to a stranger. And I think it's so important that when we do anything that we consider helpful or justice, when we register someone to vote, when we donate clothing or food, when you call a friend that you know is ill just to be there, you are assuming the mantle of the helper. You don't need any special gift. You can assume the role of the helper. And we're all shaped by the people and events that have happened in our lives. And Fred Rogers was an only child, and he grew up very secluded. He had some severe breathing problems. He spent a lot of time in his bedroom by himself with his puppets because he had to stay in an air-conditioned room. And at that time, there wasn't central air anywhere, so his parents had invested in an air conditioner. And he was also bullied and for being overweight. He was called Fat Freddy. He didn't have a lot of friends in his life. But instead of becoming a bully himself, he was able to kind of create a world in which he wanted to really be a helper. He spent his time as a minister, as a musician, as a TV educator, really, really promoting his gospel. He was Christian, his gospel of love your neighbor. He also promoted the idea of loving oneself as well. And it's interesting to me, I'm a community minister, I'm not a parish minister, but I think Fred was really the most famous community minister that there could be when we think about him that way. And when he was ordained in 1963, the charge to the minister by his Presbyterian ordainee were these words: "Fred, we want you to shake us through a God who involves himself in our world, a world that includes TV cameras, studios, directors, puppets, and children. All this, too, is God's world. And we, as the church, charge that you speak to disturb us. We charge you to speak us, to remind us that we, too, through you, must be involved." And I'm not sure that Fred would have taken the path of a minister in the way that he did if he hadn't had some very challenging life experiences as a child that really shaped him. And I know that most of us in the helping profession have either undergone some trauma or we've seen someone that we really love suffer deeply. And we have decided that we want that kind of suffering to end, or at least let that person know that they are not alone in their suffering, that there is someone there to be a witness with them. And it seems strange that sometimes the very people or circumstances that hurt us the most maybe, upon reflection, have allowed us to grow and to access a different part of ourselves and to truly learn to be empathetic to the struggles of others. And to be empathetic, I think, means that you have been able to endure your own struggles and that these have allowed you to really come to a place of openly understanding what other people might be going through in their life. To be empathetic means that we have learned to accept help as well. Fred Rogers stated more than once that it is very hard to receive because then we're not in control. When we're giving, we are in control. We are the giver. When we receive, it can make us really vulnerable. And vulnerability is not a place that most of us are comfortable with. So when we give, we're in control, but when we receive, we're vulnerable. And Fred said, I think the greatest gift that you can ever give is an honest receiving of what a person has to offer you, what a person has to give you. So the greatest gift can be in receiving, not in giving. That's counterintuitive to some of the advice that we've heard. I believe that this idea of giving and receiving, this mutuality of interconnectedness is really important to the whole idea of what empathy means. To be able to openly give and receive means that we've crossed this bridge of separation and we've entered this space that we call interconnection. And this interconnection, this interconnectedness can be with family members, with friends, or even with strangers, with people that we've never met. And this is something that Fred practiced daily. He worked very intentionally. It wasn't just something that he was able to do. It took hard work for Fred. And it takes hard work for all of us. In order to honor the inherent worth and dignity in others, something we profess that we really believe as our first principle, we must be able to really cross over that bridge of separation into that space of interconnection. And in order to do that, we have to really be able to value and honor our own inherent worth and dignity, to be able to move over that bridge to honor somebody else's immutable sense of self that has dignity. And if you can honor your own experiences, really honor the truth of your own experiences, then you can honor another person's experience. The wisdom from Fred and Joanne Rogers that Jared read just a little earlier is really a wonderful way, I think, to think about our UU first principle. So I'm going to read Fred's quote again. It is very important to look inside yourself and find that loving part of you. That's the part you must take care of and never be mean to, because that's the part of you that allows you to love your neighbor. That acceptance of yourself will allow you to accept your neighbor. And your neighbor is anyone you happen to be with at any time. So Fred was Christian, but all of the world's religions honor this concept of loving the people you find around you, whether they be family or stranger. Mark 12:31, the great commandment, love your God, but love yourself as you love your neighbor. There is no greater commandment than this. Judaism in Leviticus 19:34, you shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you, who journeys with you, who finds himself with you, as the native among you. And you shall love him as yourself, for you were once a stranger in Egypt. You were once an outcast. You were once a stranger in a place where you were not welcome. And when many of us say namaste, what are we saying? The divine in me bows and honors the divine in you. And as Unitarian Universalists, we believe part of our theology in Universalism is that each one of us has a divine spark within us. We are born with this divine spark. And we acknowledge this divine spark by honoring the inherent worth and dignity of every person that we meet, but also honoring our own sense of worth in this world. So the wisdom from all of the great religions always has this circular journey of ourselves to others, ourselves to others, ourselves to others. And this This is the work of crossing that bridge. And so we're going to end this service with a very intentional activity to help all of us take time, take a moment, to reflect on the life-changing people that we have encountered and to think back about what experiences in our life have nurtured us to be the men and women that we are today. And I don't know how many of you recently saw the movie. Not the documentary, but the movie. Okay, so this, you will be a little familiar with this exercise, the exercise from the restaurant. Fred has this idea about how do we get loved into being? How do we get loved into being? What are the people and the experiences that have helped us understand that we are valuable and that we are loved? And how we, in turn, want to love others? And this is not always a rosy-colored journey. Love is complicated. We all have some kind of wounds from our past. We have all learned different things from the people in our lives. But even if we've had difficult relationships with people, sometimes from those relationships, we learn ways that we want to be different in the world. And that helps us have empathy for other people. And so right now, just for a moment or two, I just want you to sit quietly and just allow yourself to think about the people and the experiences you've had in your life who have helped love you into being. And I'll ring the chime when the moment is over. So allow yourself just to sink into this. Let the names come quietly to your mind. Hold them in your heart as you hold yourself in love. And to kind of provide a closing for this portion of the worship service, we will sing, and you can remain seated for this, we will sing hymn 1037, We Begin in Love. I believe that you sang this rather recently, so you may know the tune, and I invite you to just bring fresh ears to the words. I will do the spoken portion and you will do the singing portion. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible. For each time we have struck out in anger without just cause. for each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others. For the selfishness that sets us apart and alone. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit. For losing sight of our unity. For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
Hey there, neighbors. I see a lot of helpers out there. People who show up when they're called, do the work when it's there in front of them, offer other types of help, maybe financial support sometimes. And though it's hard to receive, I think the church is ready. I think we're ready to fully receive your gifts. And so with that, this morning's offering will now be accepted, and I invite you helpers to be as generous as you are able. And if this is your first time here with us this morning, please let the collection basket pass you by as our guest. We are grateful that you're here.
Yes, it's true, we are ready to receive. And thank you, not just for your gifts of money today, but also for your gifts of your presence and everything else you do for this church. It's gratefully accepted.
As we prepare to leave this holy space made holy by each of your presences, remember to share your gifts with the world. Remember that goodness will come to you. And remember that we are both the friend and the stranger to those that we meet. Blessed be.
Before we finish with our bond of union, got a couple of announcements. Today at 12:15, there will be an RE meeting. On Wednesday at 6:15 in the morning, once again, the prayer circle is going to meet in the chapel down the hall. And you all are invited, even if you haven't come before. Importantly, next Saturday is our all-church cleanup day. We do have a number of tasks that we do need some people for. Plan to replace some fluorescent lights, not so much in here, but in other parts of the building. And safety requires that one person's up on the ladder and somebody's down below. So we need somebody for that, and as well as for other things. And then, with gratitude, a total of $155,000 has been pledged so far for the Capitol campaign. Thank you all. Letters will be going out this week. Now, Jared, if you'd lead us in the bond of union.
So please rise as you're willing and able and join hands with the folks to your left and right and all around. And we will join together in reciting our bond of union. We join hands in Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, pledging ourselves to an individual religious freedom which transcends all creeds, not to think alike, but to journey together.